Good evening, I'm Al Voner, and you're tuned to 90.5 WICN, Jazz Plus for New England. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Listen online at wicn.org. This week's edition of The Public Eye, my guest is author, philanthropist, and researcher Chuck Collins. His new book is Burned by Billionaires, How Concentrated Wealth and Power are Ruining Our Lives and Planet. And it's been many years since we've had Chuck on, so it was nice to have him back. The new book, really an eye-opener, and I would urge listeners to go out and buy the book, Burned by Billionaires. Very insightful. Chuck, nice to have you back.
Thanks for having me back, Al. Great to be with you.
This is... You and I talked a little bit before broadcast. This is a topic that's on everybody's mind. And it doesn't matter whether it's yesterday, today, or even into the future. The one thing I always hear, and I'm sure you hear it even more so, is the fact that people say, no matter how many jobs I've had, no matter how many hours I work, it just seems like I never catch up. But the billionaires, the very, very wealthy, seem to be insulated. It never affects them. It may be a small percentage, but that small percentage holds a tremendous amount of the wealth in this country. So let me start right from there. Is that indeed the fact that the wealthiest of the wealthy, many people use the word the one percenters, do they indeed hold the majority of wealth in this country?
Yes, and it's become more so. So just in the last couple decades, we're seeing a steady upflow of wealth, income and wealth assets, to not just the 1%, but the lion's share is now going to the richest 0.1%. Those are people with like north of $40 million. And that's where the power and what I would say the drivers of inequality now lists. So yeah. It's real. People's wages have been flat or falling. The cost of living is rising, and people are feeling the squeeze. And yet, most of the wealth is flowing upwards.
Now, in your new book, "Burned by Billionaires," one of the things that caught my attention was the fact that not only is that 1% holding the vast majority of wealth, but because of that extreme wealth, they also have tremendous influence in how laws are shaped, the direction of the economy, how social programs are delivered. So you get the sense that a silent minority of extremely wealthy individuals really have their way when the rest of the rest of citizens in this country basically have to go along with it, or otherwise, put up or shut up, as they say. Is that a little too extreme?
No, I mean, I think it's important to say it's not about the money. I mean, obviously, it's a huge amount of money. But when you have more than $40 million, your kids are going to be fine. Your grandkids are set. You're flying on a private jet. You have multiple homes. You have a buffer around your life. And you're no longer buying jets, you're buying senators, and you're buying media outlets. And that's when it really starts to corrode and affect the rest of us. And the real reason I wrote this book is to say, this is really touching your life. Because some people say to me, who cares who rich the rich are? It doesn't bother me, it doesn't affect me. And what I'm trying to say is it affects everything you care about. Your health, your housing, your voice and vote in politics, down the list. We'll talk about it. But, it really does. You need to take it personally. It really touches you personally.
And you know what, Chuck? This is the part that I don't get it, or I'm not fully on board because I don't understand it 100%, is the fact that, as you said, if you've got the $40 million, which is a tremendous amount of money. Very few have that kind of money. I know personally, I'd buy myself a very comfortable place. I'd just lock myself in and just say, I'm going to enjoy the rest of my life. I'm going to pursue the hobbies that I love. I'm going to have the people I like to have around me, and period. But it seems like the more wealth, the more influence, and they feel that they have to, as you said, play a role in political campaigns, how laws are established. Why not just back off? You've made it. You're never going to have to worry again, and leave the little guy alone. But it seems like they have to have their hand in everything. Is that an ego thing?
You know, I suspect there are people like what you described. You know, that I got my $50 million. I'm not going to really be engaged. I'm just going to, you know, live my life. But what happens is you also get surrounded by advisors and people who are going to help you manage your wealth. And so then they start to say, well, you know, you should invest in these trusts and offshore investments because then you won't have to pay taxes. Oh, and you probably should lobby on this legislation because otherwise they're going to tax your inheritances. And next thing you know, a lot of energy your consultant's energy is going into defending your wealth, fending off competition, minimizing tax, moving your money around in global shell games. And then, you know, when you start to get toward $1 billion, your investment advisors are saying, you know, Al, let's take 15% of that and we'll put it over here in this private equity fund and we'll get some 25% returns for you. And you're like, oh, okay, sure. And next thing you know, that's the money that's going to buying up hospitals and healthcare facilities and trying to squeeze more money out of patients. You know, it goes into this predatory, I would call it extractive part of investing. You know, and there are probably exceptions, and there are probably billionaires who did say, you know, I've made my money, and now I'm just going to, you know, sort of stay outside the fray. But more and more what we're seeing is money and influence go together.
It would seem to me, Chuck, and I'm talking, now I'm getting into a more of the psyche part of all of this, is that whether you... If you never had money, and for whatever reason, whether you started a business and you were extremely successful and you rose to the pinnacle of financial success, that's got to be an ego booster. And I know I don't want to make it sound like everybody's an egomaniac in this world, because that's certainly not the case. However, tremendous amount of money. Now, as you said, you're drawing a lot of attention. There's a lot of focus on you now, or on your organization. So I'm just wondering if ego, from a personal perspective, plays a role in it, to the point where that individual, male or female, loses sight of what's truly important. And as you said, gets on board with advisors and consultants and people that are leading them in the direction that they probably, prior to attaining that kind of wealth, never would have attained or never would have achieved. Does ego play a part in this?
Well, I think what happens is people are then surrounded by, boy, Al, aren't you the smartest guy? You look at you're so successful, and, you know, it starts to be a challenge to humility, probably. And you start to believe, well, I am the smartest guy in the room, and you know, everybody hear what I say. Maybe I should run for office, and maybe I should have a newspaper where I write my views every day. And, you know, shouldn't you talk to me and care about everything I do? And, you know, we could go on this. I think in some ways I was trying to, in the book, say, look, this isn't necessarily about the personality or behavior of an individual billionaire, although sometimes that can be bad or sometimes it can be exemplary. It's really about the system where we've changed all the rules and the dials and the in the kitchen, and the money is rewired flowing upward as opposed to flowing to workers and middle-class folks and people who want to own a home. So it's sort of like, yeah, the individual behavior. And I think what happens to really wealthy people is they're at risk of losing their humility. They start to believe they're the great man theory of history, and that it is about them, and it is how the wealth is entirely their own doing. When in fact, a lot of people were lucky timing, showed up at the right time, or created a product that people love and are being rewarded for it. But then, doesn't mean you're the smartest guy in the room always.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I haven't seen any private jets in any of my neighbors' driveways, but, you know, you do sometimes really drive through neighborhoods and places and you see, three or four BMWs and Audis and maybe even a Bentley, and you think, What do you need that all? What do you need all of that for? So, you know, so ego plays some role in it. But here's the, one of the important things that I derived from your book, the term political hijacking. And I'm going to let you talk a little bit about that. But that the undermining of the democratic principles, which is what this what this country was founded on. Talk to me about this political hijacking that this great wealth causes.
Yeah, I mean, in a way, it's a form of capture. Wealth is capturing our democratic political system. It's influencing who's running for office, who gets to stand before the voters. Oftentimes they have to go around and, you know, convince a couple of wealthy people to back them before they can become a viable candidate. And then once elected, they're beholden, and they also continue to get campaign support and legislative influence and lobbyists and others all coming in on behalf of the interests of the billionaire class and the ultra wealthy. So, you know, your voice, my vote, pretty much is diminished. It's not irrelevant. You know, there are times when our votes really matter and kind of can make a difference. But more and more at the national level, our whole society has been hijacked. The billionaires have hijacked our democratic system. And that, here we are, you know, I mean, in a way, we're living through a time when this is the expression of inequality. You have a president, and I'm not going to, you know, I think we have Democrats and Republicans over the last 40 years, this is who have allowed these inequalities to grow, mm-hmm. who have not been paying attention to the wages of working people. But now you have an administration that's almost made up entirely of a cabinet of billionaires who are pushing forward policies that are good for billionaires and not so good for everybody else.
Yeah.
That's the natural outcome of these growing concentrations of wealth and power.
And I'm sure that, you know, and obviously people are feeling the, you know, people are feeling the effects. I hear it every day, you know, like, mortgage rates are crazy. House prices are crazy. You know, now with the tariffs in place and, you know, so on and so on. And for the average working man and woman, it really does take a toll. I want to take a quick pause to remind our listeners that you're tuned to 90.5 WICN, Jazz Plus for New England. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Listen online at WICN.org. I'm Al Vona, host of The Public Eye. My guest this week is author, philanthropist, researcher, just about a jack of all trades, Chuck Collins, and we welcome him back. His new book is Burned by Billionaires, How Concentrated Wealth and Power Are Ruining Our Lives and Planet. The scary part of all of this, Chuck, as I'm listening to you, is the fact that, as you said, this concentrated group of extremely wealthy people who are insulated from the everyday problems and pressures that face all of us, and that is just trying to keep up economically, don't even have the sensitivity, it seems, or the understanding anymore. As you said, they just push through policies, and you know, the American dream, what is there of the American dream anymore? I mean, if you can just about pay your rent, if you can keep up with your mortgage, most people say, I'm lucky just to be able to do that. Have they basically eroded what was so important? I mean, when I was growing up as a kid back in the 50s and 60s, my folks both worked really hard. You know, we didn't live an extravagant life, but it was comfortable. And I could tell, at the end of a day, the end of a week, you know, they both felt, they sit back and say, ah, oh, another week gone by, but you know what? We made it. We put food on the table. The bills are all paid, and everything was honky dory. Today, people are like on a 24/7 stress test, just to be able to keep, as I said, food on the table, a roof over their head. Is there any end to this?
Well, first of all, you know, it's not an illusion. Our parents' generation, and up until the mid-70s, lived in a very different economy. It was an economy that was building a middle class, that was expanding wealth and opportunity for more and more people every year. We were growing together as a society. We weren't pulling apart. And then in the late 70s, we started to pull apart. And it's not an illusion. The cost of living is going up, and real wages have stayed flat. Or if wages are going up, they're not going up at this point to keep up with the cost of groceries and the basics. And it is a stress. It, you know, the American dream, as I write in my book, has gone to Canada, or to Eastern Europe, or you know, Northern Europe. These are countries where you don't have to be rich to have a decent life.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we pride ourselves in social mobility, and it was very true for certain generations right up until the 70s and 80s. Younger people could, you know, do better than their parents and have more stability. And now we're going in the opposite direction. And it is incredibly stressful. That's one thing that we don't really talk about, is to live in a society where you're sort of told, hey, get out there. It's all about you. This is a meritocracy, and you're not obviously doing very well. You must be slacking off. That adds to that stress and shame of not making it in a very polarized economy.
Yeah,
so that's one of the ways it really touches us, I think.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. That sense of that self-worth is diminished no matter how hard you work. I mean, I know friends and family and neighbors that work two, three, you know, one full-time job, a couple of part-time jobs, just to be able to keep, as I said, food on the table, the roof over their heads, you know, your kids go to college, the obligations, but it's so stressful. And you can see the effects. You know, they don't really enjoy their lives because there is no life. Everything that they do, every moment is either spent working or worrying about how the bills are going to be met. But going back to the original premise that this tremendous concentration of wealth, why is it that 300 plus million people in this country from coast to coast, East Coast to West Coast, and across a broad spectrum of individuals, and I'm not making it. I don't want to make it sound as if, you know, people have just sat back and they've been complacent and haven't done anything. People are angry. People have voiced frustration, and yet those 300 million average citizens don't seem. It doesn't seem to make a difference, and I find that very disturbing. So I want to get your sense on that.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think, in a way, you described, you know, why people are preoccupied. They're busy. They're trying to take care of their kids. They're trying to figure out how to take care of their elders and their family. God forbid you should have a child with a special need. That adds a whole other layer to things. People are, and a lot of people have given up on politics. They're like, well, that doesn't matter. I just have to find my own individual solution to my own economic security. And again, to go back, coming out of World War II, that was not the case.
Mm.
You know, you could have a high school education, you could get a decent livelihood, you could own a home, you could retire before you die, you could have access to healthcare, your kids could, you know, have a decent life. That is that American dream. And people, I think, you know, I guess I would come back and say, we actually have to reengage. You know, the sleeping giant of sort of the American politics kind of is ready to wake up and say, wait a second. You know, and I think people are angry, and, you know, we keep voting back and forth. You know, I think we're going to see the pendulum keep going back and forth because no party, no leaders have really addressed the underlying cause of our pain. And I would argue it's these extreme inequalities. And, you know, under President Eisenhower, we taxed the wealthy at much higher levels and invested in infrastructure and housing and debt-free education and things that helped build the modern middle class.
And it all made sense and it worked, right?
Yeah. Yeah. No, we were growing together as a society. It may have been that some businesses weren't as profitable as they wanted and the rich wanted more money, but, you know, in 1983, there were 13 billionaires. Today, there are over 1,000.
Mm.
And their wealth, we're about to see the creation of the first trillionaire in the United States.
Yeah.
We're just pulling apart at a dizzying pace.
Chuck, the other part that gets me, and you touch upon it in, you know, every chapter of the book, I mean, it just comes through nice and clear, is the fact that these extremely, extraordinarily wealthy people, why would you oppose paying more? It's not going to put a dent in your wallet. It'll go to programs. It'll go to help other Americans, your neighbors, your family members, your close friends, to at least achieve, as you said, a level of a decent level of living. This pushback about, you know, don't infringe on what I have. This is my domain, and you cross that line, and you've got a problem. Instead of sharing, instead of helping to contribute, I don't understand. If I had $40 billion, it would not be, if somebody said, we're jacking your taxes up another 5%, whatever, not a big deal. It's not going to impact that person at that level. But yet, as you describe in the book, as you said, the political hijacking, the influence, and the pushback. No, I want no more taxes. I want to be insulated from that. Let the little guy pay all of that. What happened to equality?
Well, you know, I think that is the moment we're in. The fact that the wealthy can kind of dictate policy. So, okay, we don't have, you know, little folks should pay taxes, not me. And then that dynamic of like, I want a 25% return on my investment. You know, the 6% return isn't good enough. So I'm going to go out and I'm going to buy a bunch of hospitals. So my private equity firm is going to, you know, we saw this with Steward Healthcare in Boston and Worcester and other places.
Right.
They start to squeeze a perfectly economically viable health institution, but they want to get more money out of it. They want to squeeze it harder. Same with housing, you know. Billionaires are driving up the cost of housing, pushing up land, building luxury housing, but also moving into the rental market, buying up mobile home parks, buying up single family houses because middle-class folks can't afford to buy a home anymore. So we're just going to rent it to you for the rest of your life. And that's a profit-making opportunity for the billionaires. So in every corner of our lives now, we're seeing the tentacles of wealth extraction coming into our, pick our pockets, basically. Housing, grocery bills, what's on your dinner plate, your pets. I actually have a chapter talking about how these billionaires are moving in. They're buying up all the veterinary clinics. They're buying up the health services for animals. They know that people are willing to go into debt because they love their dog or cat or other animal. And they're figuring out that that's another place we can make more money. So every little corner of our lives we're seeing this extraction happen.
It almost sounds as if they take pleasure in bending the backs of average Americans and saying, you know, I've got this over you. I've got this power, you know, this financial power, especially over you. And I love watching you squirm. I know that sounds a little extreme and I don't want to sound like an extremist. But sometimes I even feel that way. It's like, you know, like you said, just having one child or having a pet can be an extraordinarily difficult financially, especially if there are issues involved. And yet, there doesn't seem to be any end. And I want to go back. I know we haven't got a whole lot of time left, but very interesting what you said, that dynamics of the pendulum, Democrat, Republican, Democrat, swings back and forth. The blame can be easily hung on either. And yet no remedy in sight. What will it take at this point, Chuck, to turn this all around? You know, who will be the game buster? Who will make all the difference? I don't see it.
Yeah, no, I think until we address the sort of underlying cause of our grievances, we're going to keep treading water and becoming more and more cynical and mad at whoever's in power. You know, I mean, the current president basically said, hey, I'm going to help. I hear your pain and I'm going to work on that. But I'm going to also blame immigrants for the problems. And to me, that's a huge deflection and a distraction. You know, we do need a sane immigration policy in this country. But the fact that there are immigrants in our society is not the reason why our grocery bills are going up or the underlying pain that wages have been stagnating for 20 years. So, you know, I think when we see people run for office and then follow through on, I'm going to build an economy for everybody, not just the billionaires. And people start to win office on that and start to say, yeah, okay, why aren't we raising the minimum wage? Why is it that wealthy people are opting out of paying taxes? Can't we build affordable housing for the middle class? No, rich people shouldn't get to decide, you know, what our legislative policies are. And healthcare shouldn't be always in the for-profit arena. There should be just some decent healthcare that isn't all about making money for billionaires.
Right.
You know, so I think, you know, A, we need to understand how these inequalities touch us very personally. Secondly, we need to talk to elected officials and our neighbors and push for leaders who are going to say, nope, I'm not going to side with the billionaires. I'm going to side with everybody else. And we're going to build a society. We're going to go back to the 50s, 60s, 70s when the rising tide did lift all boats, not just the yachts.
Right.
And we can do that. We know how to do that.
Right.
We did it a generation before.
It would have seen, like as I said, my parents, you know, came from nothing, and you know, they had those opportunities to bring themselves at least to a level, as you said, of comfort without the stress of worrying. And I think most Americans, I don't think everybody wants to be a billionaire. I think most people want to be comfortable, want to be able to afford a vacation, want to be able to afford education, and very importantly, and you've touched upon this, healthcare, all of which come through very clearly. In your book, Burned by Billionaires. As I said at the outset, this book is just eye-opening. It brings forth what's really happening, the things that most people don't want to talk about. And Chuck has put it between the pages of a book in a very easy format. In other words, it's something very understandable for any one of us. Chuck, real quick, if people want to reach out to you directly, can they reach you Facebook, via email, a website? How might they do that?
Yeah, the easiest thing to do is there's a website for the book called burnedbybillionaires.com, and you can see information about the book and other books I've written, and reach out to me individually, as well as I co-edit a website called inequality.org, which is more about the issues and again, what is it we can do as ordinary folks to make this a difference. But I do think we're waking up, and I do think the understanding of these issues is increasing, and I do think we can turn the corner, Al. I don't think we have to keep going down this path. We can build a society where everybody can thrive and be considerably less stressful than it is for most people.
Well, hearing that from you, I feel better, because I think I think that's what's definitely needed here. I think that's what makes what's very important, and it gives us solace. I guess that's the best word to use, solace, in knowing that, you know, this is not a dead end. This can be turned around. It just means being open-minded and open-hearted at the same time. Again, the book is Burned by Billionaires: How Concentrated Wealth and Power Are Ruining Our Lives and Planet. Please go out and buy the book. It's a great read. The author, my guest, Chuck Collins, certainly putting it all out there this evening and talking about what people are feeling on a day-to-day basis, you, I, and our friends, our relatives, and maybe something that everybody should get together with and talk about to affect some change. Any questions about the broadcast, you can certainly give us a call here at the studios at WICN. Our main number is 508-752-0700. You can pose any comments or questions directly to me. That's Al Vona at WICN.org. And yes, that was Chuck's rooster in the background. Chuck is a native living up in the northern New England area. And he's got a rooster that needs to be fed.
He's sounding the call.
He's saying, hey, I'm a little hungry here. I don't know about you, but I need breakfast.
Hey, you're talking to Al on the radio.
We'll have him on in the next segment. Again, Chuck, thank you so much for being with us. It was really always insightful, always great to have you on. And as I said, I urge people to buy the book, Burned by Billionaires. For the Public Eye, this is Al Vona. Thank you so much for tuning in.